Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of Planning Mars. I'm so glad you're joining me today. Well, maybe you're listening to this episode while you're at work or in the car. Maybe you're mowing your lawn listening to this. We won't have to do that much longer. Hopefully, winter will arrive soon, and we won't have to worry about mowing the lawn for a while. Maybe you're listening to this working out. Wherever you are today, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Planting Mars. This episode is brought to you by UnlockHope.com. Unlock Hope provides resources and income for a school in Hoima, Uganda. The school provides education for young girls who don't have access to education. Often when these girls aren't educated, they marry young, they have large families that they're unable to care for, and then they're forced to work difficult jobs for very little pay. So providing education for them at a young age can really turn their life around. And that's what UnlockHope.com does for them. It sells items here in the States and then provides the resources to operate that school in Uganda. So you can go to UnlockHope.com, get a sweatshirt or a long sleeve shirt. Winter's coming. You can be prepared when it gets colder, if it ever gets colder. Some t-shirts, accessories, kids' clothing. They have a clearance section. Whatever you buy, a portion of the proceeds goes to support the school in Hoima, Uganda. If you find something you like, you can use a discount code that they provided for us, same shirt yesterday. It's all one word, same shirt yesterday, and you'll get a 20% discount on anything and everything that you purchase from the store at unlockhope.com. I hope you support them, and I know that you'll appreciate what they're doing in Hoima, Uganda by educating young girls through the mission that they have there. Hey, thank you so much for listening to Planting Mars today. I'm so excited about the interviews that we have coming. I've got several of them done. It's just kind of a backlog of getting them edited and launched for you. I'm excited to have you listening to them. The motivation behind Planting Mars is thinking big thoughts, dreaming big dreams, learning to take action for God's glory and the growth of His kingdom. So we might have on the show a church planter or a missionary or another church leader. We might have a business leader or an entrepreneur or a church founder or a business founder. One day there's going to be some scientists I'd like to have on here asking questions about technology and where it's going and how we should interact with technology. Are there some areas we should say, whoa, we need to slow down in this area? Or are there other areas we need to say, let's speed up? A lot of variety on the show, and I hope you appreciate that and enjoy that. It's just how my mind works. I go from one subject to the other quite often, so welcome to my world. Today on the show, we have a young lady in Minnesota named Katie Treptow. Katie is just starting out, fresh out of college. She's a realtor, and she's newly married, and she's an entrepreneur. She owns a business and operates a business called Olive Branch Boutique. And Olive Branch Boutique is kind of, as you'll hear in the conversation that we have, is a dream that she's had for a while, operating a boutique. And she's connected that with a mission, the mission of supporting some ministries in her area. And I know that you'll enjoy hearing about how she started her business, why she started her business, and how she provides some of the resources or income for those ministries. Those ministries being Feed My Starving Children. You'll hear her talk about that, as well as Teen Challenge in Minnesota. Katie's 22 years old, but she's got a lot of great insights and wisdom, just a great passion for life. And I know that you'll enjoy this conversation we had. I had a lot of fun, really enjoyed it. One of the things she does is the conversation went on. I noticed that she spoke highly and was very close with her family. So I had the opportunity to ask her some questions about her dad and what her dad did for her. As his daughter, he had three daughters, from what she's told me, and it was just exciting to hear and interesting to hear how he raised her to do well in life. And there's a lot of great insights there for you dads out there who might be raising daughters and have some questions and be confused sometimes. One of the questions I ask is, what do I do when my daughter is just in tears? How do I handle that? How do I approach that? And she gives a great answer for that you can use. But overall, this conversation was awesome. Had a great time with it. I hope you enjoy this episode of Planting Mars with Katie Treptow. Welcome to this episode of Planting Mars. Today I've got Katie Treptow. She's the owner of Olive Branch Boutique, an adventurer, a God seeker, a wife, a Minnesotan, hope I said that right, an entrepreneur, and a realtor. And we'd like to welcome Katie to the show today. I'm glad you're on. And if you just start out by giving us a little background about yourself, the listeners love to hear that.
Sure. Hi, Richard. I'm really excited to be on this podcast today. Richard reached out a few weeks ago, and I'm just so excited to talk about my business and where I'm at in life and how the mission of what God has called me to do, how that translates into business and into my daily life. So for about me, I'm 22 years old. I just graduated from Bethel University up in Minnesota. I majored in marketing and entrepreneurship there. And, you know, I was experimenting with a bunch of stuff in college. Do I want to be a full-time marketer? Do I want to start a bunch of different businesses? I was trying to figure out where God was calling me, because within business, it's so open and you can do so much with that kind of degree. So within my last year, I kind of went into it as, you know what? I don't have it figured out, and I'm just going to let God direct this path, and I'm going to let Him decide where I'm going to go with this. And so throughout the year, He kept putting these opportunities in my way, and He kind of just led me into first opening up my online boutique, which was always my dream from junior high. And then He also put being a realtor in my path. And ever since then, I'm a full-time realtor and a full-time business owner, and I've loved it ever since.
Sounds like you got a lot going on.
Yeah, and I'm a wife and just graduated, and there's a lot of good things right now.
So let me ask you a question then about full-time. You have two full-time jobs, basically.
Mm-hmm.
How do you stay organized and make sure you're on task with each one of those careers, professions?
Sure. Well, both of these careers are like owning my own business. I mean, Olive Branch is obviously a business that I own, but being a realtor, you're an independent contractor and you have to fill your own time and you have to run your own business, basically. And so, keeping those two straight and making sure both those businesses are going well has been something I've had to learn over the summer since I've graduated. And, you know, I really try to pour a lot of time into real estate because that's my main job. And then Olive Branch is my side hustle, as my business professor always called it. I definitely have to stay organized in the sense of, okay, am I on track with Olive Branch? Are sales going up? Are we staying consistent? And are we reaching the same amount of customers as we always are? And then with real estate, I'm trying to gain all these new customers. So, I mean, both businesses are in their baby stages and I'm still growing both of them. And it's kind of fun to see how the marketing for those overlap with each other. So, yeah, baby steps for all of them.
Are there any tools that you use like day in and day out just to keep everything organized? I'm interested in things like that. Just some practical, maybe it's an app or something on online that you use to kind of keep things going forward.
Sure. I have an iPhone, and one of the apps that go on an iPhone is just a reminders app, and it just makes lists. I love lists. So I think I have about 5 going right now, and I have a to-do list. And every night before bed, I load up that list for the next day, because then that way I can go to sleep better and I don't have to be thinking about all the things I have to do. And I'm sure on any phone you can get an app that makes lists like that. And so I have an Olive Branch to-do list and a personal to-do list, and then a real estate to-do list. So that's kind of that keeps me sane, is my reminders app. I think that's the biggest lifesaver for me.
Yeah. That's good. Are you the only employee of Olive Branch? Do you operate that completely yourself, or do you have any other help?
Nope, it's all me. There are tons of people that lend me their helping hand every once in a while. I've had a web designer and I've had a graphic designer and models and all these different people helping me throughout it, but I am the only employee of it.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about Olive Branch. Kind of, as you started it, what was your purpose or goal in starting the Olive Branch Boutique?
Sure. So, giving a probably longer background than you want, but I grew up going in, I was the girly girl of my family. And so I would go into all these little boutiques growing up, whether that be in northern Minnesota or in different states. And I always, always, always wanted to own something like that. Even from like 12 years old, I just knew that that was something that was going to be my passion and something I really wanted to do, whether that be clothing or home goods or food or whatever. I just knew that I wanted to have a boutique. And so that was always something in the back of my mind, but maybe not realistic or not that it would happen, but that was just a passion I had. So then going into college, well, actually after high school, I took 6 months off and I did Youth with a Mission. Mm-hmm. And that's a missionary program. And I lived for 3 months in Denver, Colorado. And then I went out to India for a few months. And there's really where I felt my passion growing for social justice. And just being able to see the injustices towards humans, towards women, towards children. And I was like, I knew God was putting that on my heart. And I didn't know where it would go once I was done with that. But I just, He lit a fire in me about social justice. And I knew that heading into college, but I didn't really know where that would go. And then my senior year of college, we had an assignment in my entrepreneurship class, and it was to develop, create, market, and sell a product. And so my team created these coffee mugs, and those sold really, really well. And after that, we had a surplus of money. And I was talking with my professor and I was like, okay, like, what do I do now? And he's like, start your business. And that was super intimidating to me. And I was like, I wasn't going to start my boutique till I was 30 and I had all this money and I was going to be able to buy a storefront and I don't even know how to do an online business and all this stuff. And God just kept putting people in my way. There was this girl, her name's Allie, and she started her online boutique a few years ago, and she was instrumental. And one of my friends referred her to me and we met up, and she just coached me how to, which web service to use, where to get the clothes, and how to start your Instagram account and all this stuff. And then God put Trent Anderson in my life, and he taught me how to use social media and different apps I can use and all this different stuff. And all of a sudden it was just a realization of, this is something that I couldn't even imagine doing right now, but God keeps putting these things in my path to make it happen. So I'm going to trust Him and I'm just going to do it. And so my husband and I talked about it, and we looked at our savings account, and he's like, here's $400, go make it happen. And so I started the business with, you know, $400, and then a little bit more donations came in to get it all started, and I had the mug money. And so all these things kept happening that I was not expecting or even wanting at the time, because I was like, I need to finish my senior year. Like, I have a few things to focus on. But God blessed me, and he gave me this opportunity to start, you know, my passion and my dream. And so that, it really wasn't so much of me pursuing it as God putting it in my lap.
He just kind of set it up on the tee, and you hit it off there, I guess, sounds like.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. He even gave me like the golf club and, you know, those cool gloves that the golfer wears and everything. He just gave it all to me and was like, go for it. Let's see where it goes. And, you know, I'm a person that doesn't jump in. I have to know all the details. I have to know all the facts. I want to know how it's going to end up. And God more or less just said, trust me and do this. And that's where we are today.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool story. Have you ever read John Acuff's Start?
Have you ever read that? No, I haven't.
It just made me think about what you're talking about. It's basically like, you have an idea, just start working on it. And right. You'll learn as you go, and you'll build on that as you go. And it's a great book, has some good insights. But you've covered, you're doing actually what he says to do in there. Get started and go for it. So,
right. And a bunch of my business mentors, you know, Allie, Trent, my professor, I would always say, okay, when do you think I should start this? Like, when do you think I should launch? And they always said yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, just do it. Just go for it. And I think there's a misconception of starting a business of, you know, well, I mean, a lot of what people hear today is like all the tech businesses. They all start with like millions of dollars and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, a lot of them start in garages and they start with, you know, your mom's funding and all this stuff. And so I think realistically, a lot of people have dreams of owning a business or starting something that would make a change in people's lives, but they don't know how realistic or attainable that actually is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's good insight. I think a lot of people could learn that lesson, get started. And the idea has been put there for a reason, for you to run with it. So that's really cool insight.
Exactly.
At what point did you decide you were going to make the connection kind of with this business as a mission or with a mission? Was that kind of in your background, that backstory? Could you kind of talk about how you connected with some organizations and how that looks in your business right now?
Yes, absolutely. So when I was in India working with Youth with a Mission, I was put in a situation where I ran a daycare in a brothel with some other girls. And I mean, that's just such an intense situation. And God was working on a lot of things in my heart at that time and learning about, you know, passions and caring for people and just having a heart for others. And ever since then, that's really what I've tried to focus on in life. My life verse is Philippians 2, 1 through 11. And part of that 3 through 4 is, do not look, it's just about seeking others and don't look at your own interests, but seek the interests of others. And each of you should look not only, to yourselves, but to others. And so that's something I really strive for. And so, in these last 4 years in university, I have tried to keep building that and keep building my heart for others. And so it was always hand in hand, having a business that would having a business and then having it support others. Because this is not, Olive Branch is not something that I plan on, you know, getting rich off of. This is something that I want to pour my other paychecks into because I know it's helping others. And so that's always been the goal of whatever business I start. I want it to make a livelihood for others. And so I think because of India and my experiences there and then the passions of social justice that God's put on my heart, it only seems natural to start a business that would support others and stuff like that. And so the business, the organizations that I've chosen Olive Branch to donate funds to, it are Feed My Starving Children, which is a national organization that was founded in Minnesota. And they send meals out to all these orphans and all these impoverished areas in the world. And I love that organization. I have a bunch of friends that work for it. And then the other one is Teen Challenge, which is an organization founded in Minnesota that has national reach, but they take people who are addicted to drugs or just with different addictions or suicidal or anything like that, just people who are broken, and they take them in and show them the love of God and stuff like that. So those are organizations where I see God working and social justice and people changing because of those organizations. And so I would absolutely want to partner with them.
Yeah. So what's it look like when someone comes to your store and they buy a shirt, for example? Mm-hmm. Is there a portion of that that you donate to these organizations, or is it, how do you handle that? Karen, if you want to share part of that.
Yeah. So, we've done one big donation so far to Feed My Starving Children because of all the sales that have happened. But so let's say you go on the site and you buy a $20 shirt. 10% of the profits of that go to a special savings account that then goes to Feed My Starving Children and Teen Challenge. So we're going with 10% now. I would love to raise that at some point. I would also love to. We've donated auction baskets and stuff like that. So we're trying to partner in different ways with these organizations.
Yeah, it's really cool. And right now you have t-shirts. Are you? And I see some coffee mugs as well, I think. You're doing the coffee mugs also?
Yeah, we have t-shirts, coffee mugs, sweaters, dresses. It's a women's clothing boutique. So eventually I would love to have kids and men's. But for right now, our niche is going to be women's clothing because that's really there's a market for that.
That's where all the shoppers are.
Yes, exactly.
I love everything here you have in your shop. I'm hesitant to show it to my wife and my daughters, though, because, you know, I mean, I'll put them onto it as well. So I'm sure we'll. I like Life Begins After Coffee. That shirt is.
Yes, that's a great seller. And we've had, anything related to coffee, people just are eating up. So those things go really fast.
Yeah, it would go well here in our house. We're definite coffee drinkers, so it's really cool to hear how you've connected that and how you're using this business to support other organizations that are doing good. And that's really one of the things I want to highlight, this combination of business, mission, doing good in the world that really needs to be brought to more attention. And I think it's motivating as well. Initially, you had some fear, and then you came to this place where I'm just going to do it, and had some other people encourage you, and now you're starting to see the fruits of that, and I think that's encouraging for others to hear as well.
Yeah.
Just let me transition a little bit to kind of more day-to-day things for you.
Sure.
Our listeners kind of talk a little bit about how they can do better at life, maybe, and so that's kind of what we're looking for, some of these questions here to follow. My big question is, I'm a dreamer. I have a lot of things I think about or dream about. Don't always get done or start doing.
Yep.
So how do you make sure you're kind of always taking action on your dreams? Is there any key things you could share?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. As I was kind of saying before, I had this dream and this passion for a boutique, but I'm not the kind of person to take a blind step of faith. And that's really hard for me and my personality. And so for me, it's not necessarily hard to, I can dream, but turning it into reality is the hard part. And so for me, and I know this might not be the way it is for everyone else, but for me, whenever I have a dream, I'll try to work on it and I'll put my nose to the grindstone and I'll try to go. And it never goes anywhere, ever. And it's not until the point of me surrendering and opening up my hands to God and saying, God, I've tried. Please take this. And, you know, this is something that you've obviously put on my heart. So please take it over. And I'm surrendering it to you. And the second I do that, that's when my dream starts developing and it goes into a place where I can't even imagine it. You know, it develops into something where my dream far surpasses what I could have ever thought. And so, you know, when you ask, how do I make sure to take action on those dreams? It's really about surrendering them. I know that's not like a day-to-day thing, but overall, surrendering the dream and seeing where God takes it. But when you go down to the day-to-day thing, you know, it's thinking about, okay, what can I do today that'll impact tomorrow? You know, and one of my professors, do you know David Horsager? Have you heard of him?
No, I haven't.
Okay. He's an amazing, he does inspirational, motivational talks and stuff. And he wrote this book called Trust Edge. And within that book, we went through it in my senior year entrepreneurship class. There's something called the 90-day quick plan. And the, I mean, when my professor presented it to my class, we were all like, oh, okay, this is just another silly assignment. But honestly, since I've graduated, I've done three or four of them. And really what you do is you set this goal, you set this dream. So for me, it would be having 1,500 followers on Instagram. And so I set it up and I go week by week of, okay, what do I do this week to attain that goal in 90 days? And I've done that with my personal life. I've done that with my marriage. I've done that spiritually and with my business. And it just sets it up so that you have this goal, but you're not always fixated on the goal. You're fixated on this day. I'm going to do this because I know it will lead to my goal eventually. So that's kind of how, as a dreamer, I can put things into reality a little bit more.
So kind of what I hear you saying is, like, your dreams initially are a lot smaller than what God does with them. He kind of multiplies or magnifies them. Is that kind of, would you say?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yes. I'm very small. And I mean, I liked in my marriage, I'm a big picture, like, okay, you know, I am the dreamer, but my dreams compared to what God has led me to, I mean, microscopic. He sees it all. And I think I like to think of my relationship with God as a friendship and as like a daddy-daughter relationship. And sometimes I just laugh because I feel like he laughs at me because he's like, oh, honey, like, just wait and see what will actually happen. Yeah.
I understand that. Okay, good, great advice there. I'm going to have to look up, is it David Horsager? Is that
Horsager, yep.
Okay, I'll look that up. And
great book.
Okay, tell me the name one more time of the book.
Trust Edge.
Trust Edge, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's really about leadership and stuff like that, but it has a lot of different activities and things you can do within it to apply to different aspects of your life. It's great.
Okay. I had a question here that I thought of and it's left me. So I'll just kind of transition a little bit again to failures, challenges, obstacles. I realize, and it's one of the things that we constantly face as a part of life. There failures happen. Some people say that the more you fail, the faster you learn, the faster you grow. And I kind of take that approach. Not that I'm always willing to fail or risk when I should, but, what are some, in your mind, what's the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome in life that you're willing to share with us?
Sure.
And then kind of maybe to describe the events leading up to it and how you overcame or went through that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So the biggest challenge I've overcome is graduating from high school. So back when I was a sophomore in high school, I was playing sports, loved sports. Sports was my life. Totally trumped my relationship with God and friends and family. And that was where my identity was at. And so I poured everything into volleyball and basketball. And sophomore year volleyball came around and I got a severe concussion that took me out of school for 3 weeks. And after that, I was only able to go to school for 2 hours a day and then I would sleep for four and I was shut down. My brain was a mess. I couldn't remember anything. And I was really a wreck after that. I went into a deep depression, had some eating disorder stuff, anxiety stuff, and I wasn't in a good place. I lost a lot of friendships because I couldn't mentally keep those up. And so I was very lonely and that was very hard. And I was like, why would a loving God that people are telling me God is, why would he do this to me? And I thought, you know, I had done something wrong and he was punishing me and all this stuff because I didn't grow up in a background of a vindictive God, but I was kind of in a setting where that was what was taught because I was at a private school. And so at that point in my life, I kind of rejected the whole God thing because I was like, if God really loved me, he would let me play sports, because I was out of volleyball then and my doctors wouldn't sign off on that. And so basketball season came around, and after 3 days a week in physical therapy and doctor's offices, I was finally cleared to play basketball. And all my doctors said, don't do it. But being the athlete I was like, well, I'm still going to do it. So I played basketball, and then in February, I got another severe concussion, and that took me out of sports forever. And that's really when my depression, I mean, really, really hit, and I was not in a good place. And I cursed God. I said, nope, no God like this would ever do this to me, because that was my love. That was who I was, and now I wasn't an athlete. So what was I? And at that point, I was failing out of classes. All I could really take was like art classes, because I didn't have to remember anything. And I had all these different tutors, and it was a really, really hard time, and didn't have any friends. There were some people that stuck with me, and I don't blame people for leaving, because I couldn't even remember their names and stuff like that. So I was really, really sick my sophomore year. And then going into my junior year, still the same way. And things started to get a little better, catching up with academics and stuff like that. January, my junior year of high school, God got a hold of me again. And I finally saw him of who he was, and that he is a loving God, and that circumstances happen, and that he hates me, but he lets it happen because of free will and all this different stuff. And so that's really when stuff started to turn around for me. But all my doctors had said, she's not going to graduate from high school because of her memory issues, because of her learning issues, and because of everything she's missed. And so when I walked across the stage at graduation for high school, that was something that I overcame, and it was a huge, huge moment for me. And then this past May, I graduated from college with honors and all this stuff. So that was a moment in my life where I was tested, and God walked through me, with me through that. And that was my hardest challenge, was going through that and trying to figure out my relationship with God, my relationship with others, my meaning in life. And that was not a good time, but I would not redo it in any way, because it's brought me to where I am today.
So could you summarize maybe one or two like key lessons or something you learned from that time in high school?
Mm-hmm. Well, my mom always had to remind me of this phrase, but don't believe everything you think. I was in that dark place of thinking God had left me, friends had left me, I was alone and all this stuff. And, your brain can do crazy things, and because of who Satan is, he tries to make them even crazier. So, having to remember what reality is, what the truth is, where God is, don't believe everything you think. And so that's a huge, huge part. And God is always there. You know, there are so many times in life for every single person where it's like, I'm alone. He's not here. He's not talking to me. He's abandoned me. And now I picture those moments of me sitting in my room crying, or sitting in the bathroom at high school crying. And all I see now is him holding me in his arms and just being like, no, I'm here. I'm here. Just look up. Mm-hmm. So those are the two biggest takeaways for me.
Yeah. It's always in those times we look back on life that we really see some of the things we missed out on, or didn't realize God's presence or significance during that time. So.
Absolutely. That's so good.
One thing that stuck out, you said your identity was in sports, and I minister to students right now, and they find their identity in so many things other than what God says they are, or who he says they are.
Right.
Any advice for a young man or young woman who's like caught up in that, they're identifying with, I mean, I'll just say things of this world for lack of a better way to identify it, but Anything you could share with a young teen who's in the midst of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually talked to my little sister's sports youth group about this, and just talking to them about, okay, you know, in high school, you're the jock, you're the artsy kid. There are so many labels in high school, so many labels. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to college, like those things fall away and, you kind of feel like, okay, who am I actually? Who do I want to be? And so, what my biggest encouragement to, high school students is that, think about it's so hard, but think about the bigger picture. Right now, think about finding your identity and things that aren't going to fall away, because you can't control your athletic career. You can't control whether your paintings are always going to be fabulous. You can't control always being the popular kid or the shy kid. And I mean, there are so many variables in life and things are always going to change. And trying to control those things is really broken and difficult and hard. And so what I always challenge high schoolers to do is think about finding your identity in something that lasts and something that isn't going to fade away. And I don't even know if I would take that advice when I was a high schooler or how I could translate that into where I was in high school. But basing yourself in something solid, and obviously that's Jesus Christ and what he thinks of you, how he loves you and stuff like that, rather than performance. One of my good friends last night even just said that if we could translate our meaning from our purpose into how God loves us, I mean, that's really what it's about. And that's the meaning, you know?
Yeah,
that's so really that's what I have for your youth group.
That's good. I'm going to share that with him. My oldest daughter started junior high this year. So
okay,
we're like, this is it for us. This is what we're talking about when she comes home. You know, who am I?
Oh,
I have these friends. Is that who I am? I said, no. So we have these conversations a lot.
Oh man, they're so good. And I'm so glad that your daughter is able to talk about those things, because I was so open with my parents too. And I think how a parent can talk about that with their child is so influential. Those junior high and high school years can wreck you. And my little sister just came out of high school, and, man, it's tough now. Nowadays it feels very, very harder. Very much harder than when I went through it. And so for those high schoolers out there, like, I salute you. Like, you can do this, and, you know, don't feel alone, because, you know, a lot of people went through it, but it's a hard time in life. So just get through it.
Yeah, that's right. I graduated. Well, I won't tell you when I graduated. It was in the 90s. It was back in the 90s. But
okay.
I mean, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. We weren't constantly bombarded with this imagery that was telling us to change. And yet still, I mean, we had some of the same pressures, but I can't imagine what it's like today.
No.
To even wake
right
up and go. So,
and I'm just 4 years out of high school and I can't even imagine it. I watch what my little sisters went through, and it's just, it's hard. It's a battlefield of itself. I mean, spiritual warfare all the time. Oh, so man, you're absolutely in a good field, but hard field.
Yeah. It's a struggle most days, and then it's really hard all the others. So, well, let me ask you some other questions kind of about how you keep moving forward. What is it that motivates you each day? Is there a key quote or scripture that you have? You said earlier you have a life verse, Philippians 2. What is it that kind of drives you to keep going? You're busy, so you got to have something that is foundational.
Right. So Philippians 2, specifically 3-4, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility look to the interests of others. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but to the interests of others. That's my life verse. That is repeated daily for me. Going through marriage counseling, pre-marital, So the pastor we had went, who we talked about stuff with, he gave us the imagery of two hands like keep coming under each other. And so that's really what I want to do for the others in my life. And so I try to live as humbly as possible and continually trying to lift each other, others up. And I really hope that others see me in like a supportive role. And so each day I try to start with, okay, I'm going to lift these people up. And today I'm going to do three things for three different strangers. And I'm going to say hi. Whenever I pass somebody in the grocery store, I say hi and smile like that. I feel like that's my mission field is in the grocery store is I'm going to pass on smiles and joy to other people. And so I try to be I don't try to put on a face of joy, but I really do feel joy continually. And so I think that is my daily mission is to spread that and let others know. Even if I'm driving, I try to always smile because I want somebody to pass and say, oh, I wonder why she's smiling. Like, I wonder why she's happy. And so there are just a few little things in life that I try to consistently do. And that's spread the joy and be selfless. And, but I mean, that's so hard some days, especially now I'm going through a season of kind of difficult and dark and like, what's my meaning in life? You know, I think everybody asks that every day. And so every morning is a struggle to get out of bed. I'm not a morning person. And so, every day I'm laying in bed and I get brought back to the days of when I still lived with my parents. And every single day, my mom would burst into my room singing, "This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it." And she rips open my shades and all that. And while I absolutely hated it when I was at home, that is still how I get up. Every single morning, I say, "This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it." And I open the shades and my husband gets mad at me like I got mad at my mom. But that's always how I start the day because it is. Today is the day that my Father has made for me and I will rejoice and I will be glad in it.
That's really neat. several thoughts come to mind about my mother. And there was there's this old record. I mean, this this is when I was growing up. We had records. There's a song and it's, I can't even remember how it goes now, but it's called Bullfrogs and Butterflies.
Okay.
And my mom would play that every morning and it was so annoying. But
yes.
I think that's
the goal of mothers.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when you're talking about premarital counseling, I remember going before my wife and I got married. And the pastor we counseled with, he said, when most people come to a marriage, they think that there's this box that comes with it, that each person brings a box and you just pull out of the box from the other person what you need. And he said, that's totally untrue. He said, you come to marriage with one box, but the box is empty.
And it's
it's about what you put into that box. And that really changed how I viewed marriage at that moment from that point forward. I haven't always remembered that. My wife will tell you. But it was just very insightful for us when we got started.
Yeah, that's really good.
So you already said you're not a morning person. How do you maintain your relationship with the Lord? Is there a lot of people I know have a morning routine. They'll get up and study the word and pray and then go about some other things. I'll just ask it in that way. How do you maintain your spiritual life or your relationship with the Lord?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I'm asking myself right now, actually. So my husband and I, we're searching for our church right now, and we're coming out of summer where we weren't able to go to church as much. And I'm a realtor, so I work on Sundays, and I'm not a morning person, so morning devotions are not on the books for me and all this stuff. And so my mother-in-law just recently challenged me, actually, and she's like, you know, you're going through this season of this hard, dark time. Like, how are you feeding yourself spiritually? And I hadn't asked myself that. I hadn't like thought about that for a while, actually. And so just recently, since this past weekend, actually, it's like, okay, like, what am I going to do daily that will bring me closer, bring me into my Father, showing me my Father's love and everything like that. So, yeah, morning devotions and stuff like that. That's not, I'll admit I'm not a morning devotion person and a daily church attender. Like, that's something that my husband and I are still figuring out. And so, it's something I want and something that I strive for and definitely something I know I need. And so, yeah, still trying to figure that out. And, I know that's probably not the normal answer, but I'm just going to be real and say, I don't have a routine for that. And, you know, there'll be days where I spend 30 minutes in prayer and then 2 weeks later, I'll be like, oh, like, let me spend some more time. But for me, I definitely see in my life that I'm continually praying. I spend a lot of time in the car because of my job. And so that's a place where I see God in the next seat to me and we're just chatting all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, I have a very, friendship view of God, and like, he's always with me. He's always attending my time with him. And so, I never really necessarily see that I need to block out time because, I mean, I just see him daily. But I know I need to be more intentional with that.
I like your answer because it was honest. Most people would say, I do this.
I was talking to my friends about that. And I was like, oh, man, he's going to ask me and I'm not going to know what to say. But, I mean, there are growth areas and that's something I want to grow in.
Yeah. Have you ever read Spiritual Disciplines for the Christian Life by Don Whitney?
No. Who's the author?
His name is Donald Whitney. He's a professor at, I don't even know what seminary he's at now, but it's a basic practical spiritual disciplines guide. I read it every year or so because I mean, honestly, I fall into the same kind of thing.
Yes.
Get out of the habit or you don't take the time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this, it's a good practical kind of reminder of the spiritual disciplines. So just throwing that out there.
Absolutely. I got his name down.
it's really good. And there's others that are in line with that as well. So
go ahead. Okay.
Let me jump into kind of your current work. We talked about what you're doing now, mm-hmm. as a realtor and then Olive Branch Boutique. What's one thing that you're like super pumped about or excited about your current work?
Yeah. Well, and as I said before, I'm in like the baby steps of this. And so, Olive Branch started in January and I started my real estate career in June. And so I'm just getting like the fresh taste of all this business stuff. And I love that. I'm coming out of a 4-year college degree. And so I'm still looking back at my textbooks and books and saying, oh, I can apply that to my real estate business, or I can apply that to Olive Branch. And I love being able, because it's so fresh and so new, I'm able to change all these things and try new experiments with both of my businesses. And so I'm just loving being able to understand what I learned for 4 years and how to apply that to two practical applications. So I think that's super exciting. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I'm loving is seeing my boutique, seeing strangers that I don't know, seeing them wear my shirts on Instagram or on Facebook, or one of my girlfriends will hang out and she'll be wearing one of my dresses. And I love, love, love seeing that because it's like, okay, those clothes are sitting in my closet, right? One of my closets in my apartment right now. Like, that's how I see Olive Branches as something in my closet, something that I do for fun. And then when I see people wearing my clothes, man, does that just spark more fire and more excitement for me. And then with my real estate career, one of my friends actually this week, she sent me a picture of a postcard that had like my face and everything on it. And she's like, you're famous. And so it's just so fun being able to get out there, and letting people know of my boutique and of my real estate career. Because that's what I worked for 4 years, and that's what I really wanted. And now that people are encountering that and that, they're interacting with it, I think it's awesome.
Was realty something you had kind of thought about getting into for a long time, or just come up?
No, that was another thing God just plopped in my lap. I, for the first 3 years of my college career, and so for all you college people out there, I pretended like I knew what I was going to do after college. Like, I'm a straight A student. I can get any job I want and all this stuff. And I completely pretended the whole time. And then once I got to senior year, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know what I want to do afterwards. And then it all hits. Like, it's all realistic. Like, in 9 months, I'm getting out of here and I don't know what I'm doing. And so I went into senior year saying to all my professors, I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. Show me different areas of business. And so all of them were really helpful of like, okay, here's the finance world. Do you like that? Do you like this type of marketing? Do you like HR? Kind of stuff like that. So I got a lot of different tastes my senior year of different aspects of business. And, you know, I did find some that I really liked, but something I told God a few things about what I want my career to be. One was that I didn't want to sit in a desk 9 to 5. That's not who I am. I can't do it. I know some people are built for that and I'm so happy for them, but that's not me at all. And so that was something that God was like, nope, you don't have to do. But then I also told him, I don't want to work off commission, but that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. And so, you know, he chuckles sometimes and says, oh no, you can do that. But yeah, so with real estate, it was not on my board at all. It was not in my mind. And then one of my family friends, she's been doing it for 10 plus years and she needed an assistant in January. And I was like, okay, like I would love to be assistant for you, you know, 10 hours a week. Like that's totally doable. That seems really fun. And I really like her. And then once I started dipping my toe and understanding what she was doing and seeing what she was doing, I was like, I love this. I love the aspect of working with people. I love that you get to set your own schedule. I love that it's always changing and that it's hard and that you have to like prove yourself in that industry. So a lot of aspects of real estate I just fell in love with. And so ever since it was not in my mind until January. And then all of a sudden, that was just another thing. God was like, here, take a look at this. And I was like, okay, let's see where that goes. And yeah, my mentor is Rachel, and her and I actually formed a real estate team. And so she has just been coaching me ever since. And she, you know, has brought me into this and I've loved it. So no, real estate was not on my mind ever. And then God just plopped it in there.
I have a question about your college years, because you said something interesting that I found to be true with a lot of college students.
Yeah.
And it's like the first three, and some of them it's to five.
three to five years.
Right. Like, I have no clue what I'm even doing here, but because of certain pressures from different areas, they feel like they're obligated to be to college. Was there ever a time where you're like, you know what, I'm just going to sit out a year until I figure out what's going on? Or did you just like keep pushing forward?
Right. Oh my gosh. Everybody feels that way. When I graduated high school, I was not going to college. I told my mom that. I told my dad that. I told my grandmas that. And I was like, college is not for me. I'm not going to do it. I'm not interested. I barely graduated high school. And that's why I did Youth with a Mission, was because, you know, I took that 6 months off because I did not want to do the college thing because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't want to go back to school. It just all seemed too much for me at that time. And then when I was, you know, sitting in that brothel in India with those children, I was like, I have so many talents that I need to learn more so that I can make a difference. And so that was really when God was like, okay, let's go back to college. And so I hadn't toured any colleges. I hadn't thought about colleges. And so my mom and dad actually went to Bethel University. And so I was like, okay, I'll just go to Bethel, whatever. So I went to Bethel for business and I didn't really know what I was going to do with that. And that's hard when you're spending so, and it's a private university. And so when you're I'm spending $40,000 a year. And when you're doing that and you don't know what you want to do, that is so difficult. And there are so many times where I was like, I can't spend any more money and not know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And there are some of my friends who, you know, waited till their third year to declare a major, and then they had to do two or three more years. And I was like, that makes no sense for me. And so there, all of my friends I know went through a period of, is this for me? Is this what I want to do? And I think it's just so silly that at 18, you have to pick what you want your life to go towards. Yeah. I think that's kind of a silly thing that American universities do. But anyways, it's hard. It's hard to choose your major. And so I always encourage freshmen to just take general your freshman year, even if you know you want to go into nursing, you want to go into psychology, test the waters and enjoy learning and getting a well-rounded education your first year, just to see what's out there, because I think that helped me a lot with the Youth with a Mission thing, because I was like, okay, I understand missions and I understand international things. And so taking the gap semester was really helpful for me. Then also I got a liberal arts education, so I had to take all these different classes. I had to take a psych class. I had to take a leadership class. I had to take a communications class. And so that was really helpful, because it really did solidify that I'm supposed to be in business. So my encouragement to students is dip your toe in a bunch of different things. Even if you know, as I said, you want to go into nursing, try out a business class, try out an art class, try out different things, because I mean, college is for learning about yourself. And so, you know, you may go in thinking you want to be a nurse and you come out with a psych major and an art minor. You just don't know.
Yeah, I'm in favor of the gap year. Like, you went on the 6-month deal. I'm in favor of students taking a year off and experiencing some things, maybe trying out a job and different things like that. So,
oh, I love that idea. I was telling my husband what I want to encourage our children eventually, way down the road. What I want to encourage them to do is, once they graduate from high school, I want them to leave the country for a year. I want them to go experience something. I want them to go do an apprenticeship somewhere. And I just think that we get very into the routine of high school, college, like you have to do that because it is what is cemented into our heads. Yeah. But man, if you can open up your horizons and broaden your views just a little bit more at 18, that really helps you understand where you are and what you want to do later on in life.
Yeah. I think it could be very eye-opening for many students.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about family? You're married.
I am married.
So you said earlier something that I want to ask some questions about, that you have two sisters, so there's three daughters in your family. So I need some advice here in just a minute. But first, how long have you been married? I guess first question.
Yeah, Josh and I, my husband, we've been married since last June. So a year and 2 or 3 months.
Okay. All right, so you're newlywed still.
Oh, we're newlywed. Yes. Yes. We're young newlyweds. All right.
So kind of as you guys, and I'm sure, does he work as well? I'm sure he has.
Yep. He graduated a year before me, and he is computer technology kind of in that world.
Okay. So as you guys have been married, how is it that you're busy, he's busy, you've got different things going in your careers. How do you guard your time with one another? What are some practical things you all do to make sure you're growing your marriage?
That's a really good question, especially since, you know, being an entrepreneur, owning two of my own businesses, it's like I could work from home and I could work 24/7 because of that. And so I think it's easier for us because I came out of college where I would, you know, go to school during the day and then I would come home and do homework. And so we were kind of used to the, you know, me sitting on the couch on my laptop. So I usually try not to work when he's home because he has the 9 to 5:30 thing. But there are nights where I'm like, you know, let's sit on the couch and watch a show together, but then I have to do a little work. But that we really try to avoid that. But I mean, with real estate, there are a lot of nights where I'm out doing showings or open houses and stuff like that. So, him and I have a very odd schedule. He goes to work during the day and I usually have to work evenings because of where we're at. And so, something that him and I have tried to, really do together is we know we're both young. I'm 22. He's 23. We got engaged when I was 19. And so we started really young. We met when I was 15. So, we know we're young and we know that, you know, people are getting married later and later. And so, what we've really tried to do is we've tried to keep saying yes in life. And what that means is some of our friends that have gotten married, they have, you know, bought a house or they're in a situation where they have to say no to a lot of opportunities. And what Josh and I do and what we've chosen to do is try to say yes. So whether that be going out on a Wednesday night with friends or, you know, we want to go to Colorado, well, let's just do it. Or, you know, start saving for a backpacking trip in Europe. Like, we both agree we're very young and there's still a lot of stuff we want to do before we have kids. And so rather than, you know, settling down, him and I are still very open to other opportunities and, whether that be new jobs or, a new place to live, moving, stuff like that. And so, that's our commitment to each other is trying to say yes to the other person and being open to new ideas.
That's great. I've heard it. It's funny. You get different insights from different people. Some people say no to everything.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like a tough life if you say no to everything. So
I know. Well, and I think that's definitely my natural inclination and his too, is to say, no, that's not realistic, but we're both dreamers and we both have ideas. And I think we kind of feed off of each other and we encourage each other to pursue those ideas. So whether that be him going in on a business with his friend or us doing a spontaneous trip to Colorado, I mean, it's never real. It doesn't seem realistic, but we really try to say yes to each other and each other's dreams.
Yeah, that's really neat. That's good advice. To use and be encouraging to one another.
Yeah. And it's scary sometimes. I mean, sometimes we look at each other like our bank account will not allow that, but it somehow has so far. So we just keep saying yes.
Those bank accounts get in the way a lot, don't they?
Oh my gosh. They're so annoying.
Wait till you add the kids on there and then it'll be something
else. Yes. Yes. We can wait a few years, but man, that'll be something.
Okay, now I need some advice. Your dad, Ray, you sound like you're really close family just based on what you said, kind of talking about your parents quite a bit. So I'm making an assumption there. Is that a safe assumption?
That's a safe assumption. Okay. We're very close.
So what are some things, like, from the daughter's perspective that dad should be doing to raise a daughter right?
That's such a good question. I'm such a daddy's girl, so you're, like, tugging at my heartstrings. I give my dad all the credit because he's the one that did it, but it was actually my mom's idea. Every fall, my dad would go on dates with all of us kids. So my mom would make sure during the year that there would be money set aside in each of our accounts for us to go on a daddy-daughter date or a daddy-son date. And what we would do is just go away for a weekend. And my dad and I would usually go up north and we would go to these art festivals, up by all the lakes and stuff like that. And we would go fishing and all this stuff. And I think those were really precious times for me, was, getting to have one-on-one attention with my daddy. And he would, go out on dinner dates with us and stuff like that. And when my mom listens to this, she'll want some of the credit. All the credit. And so I know it was my mom who would encourage my dad to do it, but I do give credit to my dad for setting aside that time and being intentional with his children. And, you know, I really attribute my view of my heavenly father to how my father treated me. And so I think it's just so true about people's view of God being how their father treated them. And so I know some people who have a very broken view of God because of how their broken relationship with their father is. But for me, my father loved me, and he was so intentional and so caring and so loving and supportive. And because of that, that's how I see my Heavenly Father. I think those are precious times, and being able to understand, like, putting aside things you think you have to do and doing the things that are intentional and are one-on-one are really important. And he was like the coach of my basketball team and t-ball team and stuff like that.
So here's the one thing I can't figure out, and especially with my oldest, she comes home. Well, here's the funny story. Like, I think my girls have a calendar on, and it's scheduled out on whose day it is to cry in the mornings. So
yes,
it's like, you've got Monday and Tuesday, I'll take Friday this week. And but the, every day is covered. It's like tears are flowing. So whenever my oldest comes home and she's had a rough day, she doesn't want to talk about it, how should Dad respond to that? Should I be like crying, or should I just sit back and just wait it out?
Yeah. This is something I've talked with my dad and my husband about. It's like a guy's natural inclination and his natural reaction is to fix.
Right.
He wants to fix it. Mm-hmm. He wants to go to his daughter's defense, and he wants to go to his wife's defense, and he wants to make sure, like, this will never happen again. And usually when I'm crying and when I'm in that state, I'm just like, please just listen and please just hold me. Like, I don't need you to go attack this guy, or I don't need you to go attack my friend. I just need you to sit and be with me.
Yeah.
And so there were many times where I would get so frustrated with my daddy because he's like, who can I go beat up? Or like, what can we do to fix this? I'm like, Dad, I don't need it to be fixed. I just need you to listen. It still happens in marriage. And even now with my dad, I'm just like, no, Dad, this is a listening time, not a fixing time.
Yeah. We have to sit on our hands sometimes. That's almost an impossibility.
And I know it's so hard. I know it's so hard for you, but that's usually what needs to happen.
Well, thank you for giving me some advice. That's helpful. Maybe no one else listening is helpful too, but to me, it certainly is. Let me kind of jump into some final questions, if that's all right.
Yeah.
And these are just for fun, most of them.
Okay. So
what is your favorite book of all time, and why is it your favorite?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not necessarily much of a reader. Mm-hmm. I do love reading, and when I put time into reading, I love it, but it's not supernatural for me to spend time doing it. But I do have three favorite books, if I can share all three with you.
Sure.
The first one would be The Giver. I've read that about four or five times by Lewis Lowry. And I first read that when I was in junior high, and the idea of a utopian society freaked me out. I remember writing my book report on it. I was like, I never want this to happen. I don't think it's realistic. I think it's kind of sick that people would want something like this. The idea of not having pain and not having love and not having, like, color, I just didn't understand that, because each person is so different, and I love the difference in people and in nature. I mean, it rattled my world thinking that people strive for a utopian society, because I love conflict and I love hard times. And how do you get stronger and how do you improve if you don't have those times?
Yeah.
So that was something that has always, that's a book that's always kind of challenged my thinking. Another one that I've read numerous times is Redeeming Love by Francine Rivers. It's about, well, people can read it if they want, but I've read it in different phases in my life, and each time I've identified with the same character, but in a different way. And so I love, love, love that book. I think I've read it four times now. And I know it by, you know, I know it like the back of my hand, but I still love it. And then this is a book I've only read once, but it rattled my world and my view of God. And it's The Shack by William Young. And that one just, I think everyone has a view of God, and it's taught in the church as a certain way. And I think that one just changes your view of God a little bit and gives you a new perspective. And that's why I love that one.
I'm a big reader, so I always ask, I haven't read any of those. I know of The Giver and The Shack. I just haven't ever taken the time to read those. So,
oh, man, you should let your girls read Redeeming Love. It changed my life.
I will do it really, that.
Francine Rivers is a great offer.
Okay. All right. Now, my next question is going to be outdated because Trent Anderson shared with me that Twitter is dead. But I'm going to ask the question.
When I saw you share that question, I was like, man, I used Twitter in junior high, and I don't know, like, I haven't used it since, so I don't know, like, what's cool or anything anymore. But I have an answer.
You used Twitter in junior high.
I did. I looked at it for a little bit, and I was like, I don't have anything to say, and I don't really care what other people are saying. So,
and now it's just so full of nonsense that it's. I deleted.
Oh,
is mine.
It?
I deleted. Yeah, I mean, my accounts are still there. I just don't use it anymore. But
right,
the only reason
right.
I ask it in this way is because it's limited to whatever the 160 or 140 characters. So that's the reason right. I ask it in this way. I'll change it after this.
No. Yeah.
If you could send out one tweet to everyone in the world, and everyone in the world is guaranteed to read, what would it say?
It would be the phrase, don't believe everything you think.
Okay.
I think that people get set and stuck because of their thoughts and their perspectives and their views. And I think it's smart to keep your views open and your ideas open and to be an open person. And I think a lot of people would, and a lot of things in our world would be different if people weren't believing everything to be true that they thought.
Right.
Yep.
My high school English teacher always said, nobody cares what you think. They want to know what you believe.
Yes.
And so that kind of goes along with that. In the mm-hmm. That's kind of the back route to what you said.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What's the best purchase you've had for $50 or less in the last 5 or 6 months? Any gadget you have or anything?
Yeah. Man, I thought about this question a lot, and I shop all the time. My husband has always seen me bring new bags into the house, but I was thinking about it, and I was like, okay, what would that be? And honestly, my best purchase, in my opinion, is my first pair of high heels. I didn't have them before because I always thought I was going to break my ankle and everything like that. But being a businesswoman, especially in your senior year of college, you kind of have to dress up and you have all these presentations and you're meeting with real world clients and you're, and for me, I'm meeting with customers because of real estate and stuff like that. And so I bought my first pair of high heels, and they really do make a difference in my confidence and like in my, so all the guys out there who think that, it's ridiculous that girls have 40 pairs of shoes. It's not like, it's not ridiculous because they really do change like my attitude and my emotions and how I am that day. So there are some, I have some heels for like a business day and for a day where I want to get stuff done. So shoes make a huge difference. And I know it sounds so silly and I'm supposed to say something really important about my best purchase, but seriously, shoes.
It just looks like a punishment that someone gave to women to walk.
There are some heels. I don't wear those kind of heels. I wear ones that like I can run in.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't like those other ones.
See, I think that some man made the high heels for a woman. She's like, I'm going to get you back, and gave the necktie to men. And made it
yes. Yes. That's so true. My husband would totally agree.
You're going to be choked every day, 40
exactly.
hours a week.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. That's great. Yeah.
All right. These are just for fun. Peanut butter and jelly or ham and cheese. I judge people based on this, just so you know, but no.
Can I go with turkey and cheese?
Sure. Why not?
Is that an option?
That's fine. It's not the right answer, but that's fine. No, I'm peanut butter all the way. So.
I'll do that.
Up to you.
It would be over ham and cheese for sure.
I've never tried that. It might be something new.
No. I mean, peanut butter and jelly over ham and cheese.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like mixing them. I was like, that's interesting.
No, don't do that. That sounds gross.
My wife's grandfather used to feed her peanut butter, cheese, and mayonnaise sandwiches.
Oh. Yeah. That sounds so gross.
It does, but.
Have you ever tried it?
I haven't, but she doesn't eat them anymore, but she remembers that from when she was young.
That's so funny.
A night at the movies or a night at home on the couch?
Night at home at the couch. Absolutely.
All right. Read a book or listen to a podcast? You said
read a book.
Okay. Stay up late or get up early? You answered this earlier, I think.
Yep, stay up late.
All right, last one, a little more difficult. You can take anyone to lunch. It can be past or present. Who would it be, and what's one question you would ask them?
Oh, I thought about this one for a while, and it would actually be Esther from the Bible. I've read Esther, the book of whatever, for a lot, and there are just so many times where, I mean, she knew she could die, and she went in anyways to save the people she loves, and so I would want to pry into that a little bit more, and like, were you doing it because of your faith or because of your love for your family, or were you doing it because you felt a prompting from God, or like, you know, why would you risk your life for that, and how do you overcome that fear? I think because I live my natural way of living is in fear, and so I would like to know how you can combat that in your daily life.
That's a good one. I've never thought of that. It's like, was there fear, and if so, how do you go past it or ignore it?
Right.
I don't know, or get over it. So that's a good one. So where can listeners find you on the web or social media if they wanted to connect or check out the boutique? Where would they do that at?
Sure. So it's www.olivebranchboutique.com for the boutique. And then on Instagram, it's olivebranch.boutique. And so that's really where you can find us. We do have a Facebook page, Olive Branch Boutique. And so that's really where you can find us. There is a blog and everything on our website. And good information about the boutique along with all those awesome clothes. So I would definitely go there. And then my personal Instagram is katie.treptow.
All right. I will include those links in the show notes, and anybody listening can just click those and be directed right to those different places. So,
perfect.
I just thought of a question. Do you like do all your own shipping and everything also, or do you have someone else?
No, I do everything.
Oh, wow.
I know there is like fulfillment by Amazon and stuff like that, but I've thought about it, weighed the pros and cons, and I like being able to put a personal note in, and I like being able to inspect the product before it gets shipped out. And so I do all my own ordering, I do all my own accounting, all my own marketing.
Wow.
Kind of thing.
You're running everything. So
yeah.
Hopefully it'll grow, and then you'll have to hire many, many people.
Yeah. The goal is to eventually open up a storefront where there's a collaboration of people who have social justice in mind when they're selling their goods. So then we can donate to a lot of different projects and support a lot of different people's ideas of goods and services.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Do
you put candy in the packages that you ship?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I just wonder.
I've actually never thought of that, but
those little peppermints that melt in your mouth.
Yeah.
This is a women's boutique. I'm not going to be shocked. My wife would love those. So.
Man, I had never thought of that. Maybe that'll be something I can do now.
I don't know where that came from. Sorry, Katie. Thanks for. Thanks for spending time with me today, and thank you for just some great insights and wisdom. You're a 20-something and have a lot of great great words of advice for others to listen to. And you're also in there starting it and doing it with Olive Branch Boutique. And that's really cool to see.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this time. And I'm glad we got to hang out together. And I hope this helps somebody out there.
I'm sure it will. Thank you.
Yeah.